Yeezy in trouble, faux Sheezy, on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They are the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of Liberty Nation. This is Scott Cosenza, and I have a very special guest today on the podcast, the resident black guy for LibertyNation.com, Jeff Charles. Jeff, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Do you want to give you a real full title there?
Race relations and media correspondent.
He is.
And the black dude.
And you do write about race, and eloquently so, I think. You wrote about the Starbucks incident a couple weeks ago or a week and a half ago, and you are on the Kanye situation as well.
I am.
This, I think, is a fascinating topic. So for people who don't know it, Kanye West kind of had a affinity or relationship, friendly relationship with Donald Trump previous to Trump's political ambitions. And then they kind of, there was kind of like a cooling off, I guess, or separating or whatever there was between the two. Anyway, Kanye recently just now was seen wearing a MAGA hat and tweeting that he loved Donald Trump.
Yeah, he said he loves Donald Trump.
Yes. So Kanye West loves Donald Trump, and the internet exploded. The left exploded. Take it from there, Jeff. Give us a tell the people what happened.
Okay, well, it all started earlier this week. Kanye had the unmitigated gall to send out a tweet saying that he likes the way Candace Owens thinks. Candace Owens, also known as Red Pill Black, is a young millennial black woman who makes YouTube videos criticizing the left, social justice warriors, all that jazz. So he put that tweet out.
She's a sort of contrarian figure, I guess, is right? Was that fair to say? I mean, she defies people's expectations because she's a well-spoken young black woman who doesn't eat the Kool-Aid and sort of parrot the MSNBC line.
That is fair to say. That is very fair to say. She basically breaks their whole image of what they want black people to look like and sound like, and the opinions that she expresses as well. So she's become very well known over the past year. And naturally, I mean, the left hates her. I mean, they have characterized her as alt-right, far-right, you know, all the names that they give to anybody who is to the right of Bernie Sanders.
She's a racist, so, probably.
Uh-oh, well, no, they can't use that. Because she's black.
Oh, I think you're wrong about that. They can call anybody a racist, including a black person, if they say something that they don't like.
Well, they can, but it's not as effective.
Right.
So they use different terms for us, like Uncle Tom, Aunt Jemima, whatever. But the thing is, those terms are much less effective than calling a white person racist. So whenever one of us doesn't conform to their ideology and expresses conservative viewpoints, they go all out. So the reason why is because their normal weapons don't work on us as well as they would work on, sorry to say it, but a white man.
I'm trying to remember who the first person I saw or heard use this term, but to describe American blacks who were strongly conservative and they just off the plantation. And I think it's an apt description because there's just no dissent allowed, it seems like, for conservative beliefs. They have to shun you off the island. Like, there's no room for Kanye West. It's almost like being pro-choice in the Democrat, or rather pro-life in the Democrat Party. There's just no room for you there. They can't abide it. And Stacey Dash, you know, the number, like, so Stacey Dash is an actress, black actress, famous for being a conservative or Republican, and she's universally ridiculed on the left as being like a stupid idiot. And meanwhile, like, Ben Affleck is celebrated as he's like some kind of, like, you know, a policy wonk or something like that, because he has the right opinions and she has the wrong ones, because, you know, especially because she's black.
Yeah, and here's the difference. Stacey Dash, like you said, she's an actress. She was in the movie Clueless, and she has been conservative from the get-go, which has earned her a lot of ridicule. Kanye West, on the other hand, people like him, they don't know what to do with him, because Kanye has a lot of influence in the black community, and he has since he first came out and got famous. He's a rapper, and he's a very good rapper. He's one of the most talented rappers that we have now. And the problem is that since he has so much influence, they don't know what to do with him right now. So they're freaking out on Twitter and on Facebook. And just because he complimented Candace Owens, and then went on to talk about his support for Trump, which he actually started in 2016. He already said that he was pro-Trump. But the gap between 2016 and now is that he had kind of a breakdown. He had some emotional issues. He had some addiction issues. And now he's back on the scene saying exactly what he said in 2016. And
yeah, they're attributing that the idea that only a mental health issue could lead a black man in America to be supportive of Donald Trump is the sort of preconceived notion of many of the sort of ocean of Twitter hate that he's getting now, I think.
Yeah, that's the narrative that they're going with. Because remember, calling somebody an Uncle Tom isn't as effective as calling a white man racist. So they have to find other ways to take him down. He will be their biggest challenge as far as black conservatives. With Clarence Thomas, it was different. They can just, you know, use something that somebody accused him of to take him down.
The other thing, too, is if that was real, right? Meaning, if it was a result of mental illness, would it be cool to make fun of it? I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, they don't even, I thought we weren't supposed to make fun of those things, right? But I guess it's okay if the mental illness manifests itself in a support for Donald Trump, then it's okay.
Okay. Rule one of the whole intersectional movement.
Oh, thank you. Yes, for that.
And the whole intersectional hierarchy.
Right.
It applies to anybody who fits into that intersectional hierarchy,
right,
as long as they agree with the left.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Could you give a thumbnail sketch for people who aren't woke on the intersectional stuff about, you know, just a thumbnail sketch of what that means and why people should be, you know, kind of their antennas should be perking up when they hear that phrase?
Oh God, do I have to?
I think so. You know, I think it's important because there's a lot of evil. There's a lot of nastiness coming out of that. And that's why I do want you to do it, because it's almost like if somebody says that, I know, okay, now I need to really, you're one of the ones to watch, and not in a good way when I hear you say that.
Yeah. So to give it just a thumbnail sketch, the intersectionality is a feminist theory that came out, I think, in the late 90s, and has gotten a lot of prominence now. So intersectionality is the idea that you could have your identity can have different facets by which people will oppress you. So just to give an example, I'm a black man. So I'm oppressed because of racism. But my mom is a black woman. So now she's oppressed because she's black, so she has to deal with racism, and she's also a woman, which means that she has to deal with sexism. And we go down the rabbit
hole. So her oppression trumps your oppression in a contest of oppressors and oppressees.
Yes. Right. On the intersectional hierarchy,
right,
she gets more points. She ranks higher because she is more oppressed.
So like a trans black woman who's differently abled would be the highest level of virtue on the intersectionality scale. Is that right?
If you add on being a Muslim to that.
Oh, yes. Right. Or Wiccan. Hey, we could do that too, right? Wiccan, something, yeah. some non-Christian, Judeo-Christian religion. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that is true. And I think, and it's like the oppression Olympics. It's when the LGBT became the LGBTQ, became the LGBTQQIA. I had said, hopefully publicly, so it's on record, that this will just continue to grow and grow and grow. And the reason why is because there's power in being one of those with the initial. If you belong, if you have an initial, then you get special treatment. The words you say aren't judged harshly. They're judged kindly. So you don't have to defend your own Facebook posts or tweets against charges of bigotry or whatever. And if somebody attacks you, you get a special shield, which is, oh, I'm one of these initial people, so I don't have to defend any thought I have, and you have to tiptoe around me. And so I knew that that would just, there's an, that initial scheme would just grow and grow and grow. Until now, which is perfect, it's just a plus sign, right? It's like,
Well, no. And everything you said is right. But remember, rule one, you have to agree with them. So if you are a black woman, gay Muslim, who is a conservative, all that stuff goes out the window.
Right. Yeah. If you're Ayaan Hirsi Ali, even though you are literally an African, I think she's born in Sudan, if I remember correctly. Yes. And, you know, victim of worst kind of religious torture. And I think also like a fatwa against her life for speaking out against same. She was listed by the Southern Poverty Law Center as like a terrorist person. Because she challenges their assumptions on the left-right spectrum.
That is exactly right. So if the first rule is fulfilled, if you agree with the left, now all of the other intersectional rules apply to you. So if you don't agree with it, that all goes out the window, just like it has with Kanye West. So
Kim, let me just interrupt and say Kim Kardashian actually tweeted out, and for people who don't know, Kim Ye is the portmanteau for the both of them. So Kim Ye in crisis potentially here. She basically tweeted out, isn't there any room for people who disagree? And it's funny because it's like, gee, Kim, I don't know how you didn't know it, but no, from your side of the aisle, there hasn't been any room for anybody to disagree. You know, Jimmy Kimmel goes on every night and basically calls you a baby murderer if you think that firearms policy shouldn't all of a sudden make felons out of most Americans, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And maybe she's just now getting it. But if she hasn't gotten it yet, she's going to get it now because her husband is going to go through what the left does when you disagree with them. And she's trying to kind of calm the situation down a little bit. I mean, I'm sure she's been talking to Kanye because he actually sent out a tweet indicating that she had called him. And so he sent out a tweet saying, I don't agree with Trump on everything.
Right. She basically said, You better get your butt on that Twitter and salvage some of what's going on, right?
Yeah, but what was great about that is that that is a perfectly reasonable statement. He didn't back off his off of his position. He just said, I don't agree with him on everything.
Right.
But he went right back to saying, I love Trump. We need to be free thinkers. And he's not the only one. Chance the Rapper, another very famous hip hop artist, came out and tweeted, blacks don't have to be Democrats. So the left is scared right now.
Okay, well, I want to ask you two questions. Number one, what is, do you think, the fallout going to be long-term for Kim Ye on this? Let me just ask that first, and then I'll get to my second one.
I have no idea, honestly. I mean, I don't see Kanye backing off of his comments.
He has a hard-headedness about him in the past, right? I mean, he's not one of these, okay, I'll immediately apologize and say I'm sorry types, right?
He does and he doesn't. And here's the interesting part of that. When he started sending these tweets out, conservatives obviously jumped on it and they loved it. And we should, because he has common ground with us. Now, for all I know, Kanye West is a complete communist in his other beliefs. I don't know that yet, but he obviously does share some conservative values. And I did see that some conservatives, not a lot, just a few, were coming out saying, well, wait a minute, don't celebrate this, because remember, he said that George W. Bush doesn't care about black people. So going back to what you said before about him being hard-headed and not apologizing, well, I'll tell you right now, in 2010, he apologized to George W. Bush for making that statement.
Sure. I think what I meant by that was on a dime, he doesn't turn around and say, oh, the Twitterverse is trending one way. Let me quickly. That's what I meant by having a hard head of just, you know, he's not going to be some, oh, if the mob says, oh, you know, we have to vote this way, then we'll vote this way. And if it's the other way, then the other way.
Yeah. And you're exactly right when you say that. I mean, because even when he apologized to Bush, he got flack for that. That didn't help his career, but it didn't hurt him either. He didn't care. He does what he feels is right. He expresses the views that he feels are right. He doesn't just toe the line. And that is why the left is coming after him so hard, because you're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what the black communities by and large vote almost as lockstep for Democrats. They can count on that as a block vote. Whether or not they come out in high numbers for Democrats or low numbers for Democrats, it's a safe bet that he won't come out in any significant numbers for Republicans. So it becomes almost like just a turnout question. And Republicans could, I think, make body blows against Democrat voting blocs if they could appeal to some of these black constituencies. What, in your opinion, could Republican politicians or non-Democrat, because I'm a libertarian and I think that I'm eager to see any kind of entrenched, whether it's Republican or Democrat. Unfortunately, there's been no opportunity for libertarians to become entrenched anywhere in terms of elected officialdom. But there are plenty of entrenched areas where there's, you know, nothing but Republican rule, and there's rot and decay and cancer of corruption there. And also with Republicans, or excuse me, and also with Democrats. And I just see, for me, it's the cities and the cesspools of corruption that have developed in so many of our major cities because of there being, you know, just one party only, basically, rule. And can you think of anything that a Republican candidates can do that are consistent, probably with their principles, or just let's say non-Democrat candidates that are the wedge issues that could help break off some of these constituencies from Democrats? Is there hope there?
Yes, they have to do two things. They have to expose the fact and harp on the fact that the Democrats have had the black vote for decades and have little to nothing to show for it. Now, there are already black people who are understanding that. It's going to happen at some point or another, because you can only have the black vote for so long before they realize that you aren't really doing anything for them. I think that if a Republican candidate actually reached out to them, specifically, Trump kind of did a little bit, but if conservatives can actually reach out to the black community and say, this is where the Democrats are going wrong, this is why you are where you are, the government is keeping you where you are, and we want to get the government out of that. We want to remove the government policies that keep black people poor, and if they can get them to see that, it's going to happen, and it's already starting to happen. Now, I'm not saying that in 5 years, we're going to see 90% of the black vote go to Republicans. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, well, of course not.
Yeah. But realistically, what if 10% did?
Well, that's 20%. The thing. If you could get even like a 15%, I think it would be a seismic shift. And yes. I always think about how it's astonishing to me the way that, you know, we see these criminal justice issues, and as an NFL fan and a football fan, I was reading an article the other day about the like a crisis meeting that they had in New York with regard to the anthem stuff. And it was owners and players and player reps, and the players were all engaged about these criminal justice issues, over incarceration and all these other things. And I just can't understand, like, yeah, and why aren't, you know, why aren't you approaching the Democrat district attorneys, the Democrat mayors, and the Democrat legislators in the cities that, you know, that so much of these things are happening in? Why aren't we seeing any movement from the Democrats on ratcheting down the drug war more so than, anyway, that was just the thought I had.
And actually, you kind of brought up where I was kind of going with that. The cities in which black people are doing the worst, where the black poverty rate is the highest, where the crime rates are the highest, they're all run by Democrats. So they're going to, I mean, black people are going to realize this at one point or another. I think it can be accelerated a little bit. But at the same time, people like Kanye West are willing to say those things, are willing to say that Obama didn't do anything for black people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Kanye West tried to reach out to Obama. Obama rebuffed him many times.
Well, that was funny, right? He said he reached out and he didn't get anything done, and Trump at least gave him a meeting, which I think is kind of funny because it's like
exactly.
a megalomaniac and another megalomaniac respecting each other there with Kanye and Trump. Well, I want to just before we leave the topic, I want to talk a little bit just about Joy Reid. And for people who don't know, Joy Reid is a massively successful MSNBC host who carries a torch for so much of the sort of popular lefty Democrat Russia-gate, leading the charge on anti-Trump. He should be impeached, this, that, and the other. And it was revealed earlier this week, I think, or at least that's when I saw it revealed, that she had a kind of hate-filled blog about a decade ago, anti-homosexual, anti-trans, anti-all kinds of leftist popular people. She actually wrote positively about Trump in comparison to Rosie O'Donnell, who I think she called fat and something else. But that was then, this is now, and now she is their standard bearer, and it seems like nothing bad's going to happen to her for these things that if you or I did them, we'd be running out of town on a rail for.
I'll tell you right now, if more stuff comes out about her, MSNBC is going to let her go because they can always get another race baiter.
Well, Jeff, I've been dying to talk about the Starbucks thing. We only have like a minute left, but I just got to get it off my chest. You wrote about it for LibertyNation.com, mocking them and showing your Starbucks cup. And I have a reputation, I think, a well-deserved one of being very critical of police and police abuses in our society, which I think are fairly rampant. Yes. But there was no police abuse here. If a business owner calls the police and says there are people who are not allowed to stay there and they refuse to leave, there's only one option for the police at that point, and that is to arrest the people and remove them from the premises. They have no other options.
Yeah, my thumbnail of this whole Starbucks situation is that the police were the only party who didn't do anything wrong. So basically, the store manager started hassling the two black men when they came in and called the police on them. There were white customers who had not bought anything and didn't get the same treatment, one of which was actually able to use the restroom. But the black men refused to leave when they were told, and they could have left and blasted it on social media if they were mad about it.
Yeah, they wanted to be arrested, clearly.
It seemed like that to me.
Yeah,
when the police got there, they asked them three times to leave. They chose not to, so they knew that they were going to be arrested. But they wanted to turn it into something bigger than what it actually was.
Right. That gives lie to the whole notion, by the way, that they just wanted to have their business meeting, meaning they could have had their business meeting at any time they wanted. They should have just let, like you or I would have done if it were an important business meeting and we were wearing our untied sweatpants, like the gentleman who was arrested for his real estate meeting was, we would just go outside and say to our business partner, sorry, they're being jerks in there, so let's do it somewhere else, right? You wouldn't say, let me get arrested.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they were going to meet somebody there. He showed up in the video, but they could have, like I said, they could have walked out. They could have even filmed the whole altercation with them and the store manager and blast it on social media.
And that store manager, by the way, we haven't heard from her. She may have had a reason totally separate from race for wanting these gentlemen removed from the store. Like, just because they were black and were asked to leave doesn't mean they were asked to leave because they were black. Even if a white person wasn't asked to leave, maybe they said something else. Maybe they smelled. Maybe they whatever. Who knows?
It's possible. It's possible.
You know, it's a Center City, Philadelphia store. Black people are in there all day. It's not like this random thing like, look what happened when a black guy went in there. It happens all the time. All right. I vented on my as a former Philadelphian. It just touched it off. And the other thing is, too, I really like it when I think it's really important to criticize the police when they deserve criticism and not when they don't, because they do have a very hard job to do. They meet people on their worst days. They're dealing with these hard circumstances and they have a monopoly on force. So I think we need to be judicious in our criticism, but unmerciful when warranted.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on The Uprising. You keep up the good work, and I'll just tell people to go to libertynation.com and scroll down to the author tab and click on Jeff's smiling face and read his good stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Cheers. For the days when you are on the go, Liberty Nation's new audio feature now makes it possible to listen to our articles in the Listen to the News section of libertynation.com. Simply click on Play the SoundCloud or Play in Browser tabs for fully narrated versions of our top stories. At Liberty Nation, we work hard to bring you the truth at your convenience.